Friends, and welcome to yet another episode of What Page Are You On? It me, Bethany Rutter, and I'm here with my good friend and business partner.
It me, Alice Slater.
How are we feeling today, my queen?
Oh, my love, we're tired. But we're thriving.
We're living. We're still alive.
I had nothing there with the butt. I was like, what can I pull out to make that sound less depressing?
Well, at least we get to talk about books, which is a nice thing.
Reviving.
Although I will say, I know you're the same. I'm slightly under this month. It was a slightly lighter month.
Thank God, because I've struggled, mate. I've struggled.
I like to come in with my 2 book a week average, bringing us to a total of 8 books because we can do maths. But this week I'm bringing 7. How are we doing?
I've got five.
Okay, we can, and we've
Eight.
got other business to discuss.
But also, of my five, three of them are audiobook rereads.
Gorge.
Comfort rereads, but we'll discuss them. We'll discuss them anyway.
I know you've got things to say about at least one of my books. So shall we hashtag dive right in?
Let's dive right in.
So shall I begin as I've got a couple more?
Yeah.
Look, you could argue that this doesn't even count because it's so short, but it was published as a whole book. It was sold as a whole book, so I'm counting it as a book, which is So Late in the Day by Claire Keegan.
I remember that.
Yeah. So it's like a really dinky little book. Do you know this book?
Yeah, I remember it. It's like it's almost like a short story, isn't it?
Exactly. But because it was, you know, how else am I meant to discuss it if not as a book, you know?
I think if it has an ISBN, it counts. As
It
far
has
as
got an ISBN.
the podcast is concerned.
No jury would convict. So here is the plot. Have you read this book?
No.
Have you read other things by Claire Keegan?
Remind me what else Claire Keegan has written.
Small Things Like These is her big one.
No.
Okay, well, she's good. She's like great Irish author. After an unevent, basically it's about a man heading into a long weekend on the bus home, and he is thinking about this woman who he fumbled, you know, woman whom with whom he might have spent his life had he acted differently. All evening, with only the television and a bottle of champagne for company, thoughts of this woman and others intrude, and the true significance of this particular date is revealed. It's 64 pages long. It is so great. It is so perfectly formed. It make you think in a good way. It's really well characterized. I think if you just want like a little nibble, if you can like get it from the library, you know, if you can find it on audio, I think you personally would enjoy it. As a short story enjoyer, I just think it's really well constructed, well conceived, great.
Well, we're going to a bookshop today.
We are. The
Maybe
rumors are true.
Maybe I will treat myself to a tiny volume.
A tiny little volume. So yeah, it was like a funny way to begin the month with such a tiny little book. It's 64 pages long. But it was so good that I was like, yeah, loved it. Very contented with my decisions. How about you? How did you begin the month?
I began the month. Well, what I thought I might do is I'm going to start off because in the last episode, I went through the 4 books I was currently reading. So I thought, if I may, I'd offer an update as to where I got with those. Just quickly. Quickly.
Please.
I finished Don't You Miss It by Julia Pike.
Oh, yes.
Yeah, that I really enjoyed. That's the campus, kind of campus novel, sort of, not really. It's sort of graduation, 4 best gal pals, one dies very tragically. And then the novel is sort of about the aftermath of this loss. I really enjoyed it. I think it'd be a really great read if you like specifically books about what it is to be young and on the brink of the rest of your life and feeling derailed. I really enjoyed it. It also had a really interesting element, which is that the dead woman, the dead girl, exists in the narrative through her notes app, which was just so fun. Even though the book is not fun, it's really fucking sad, but it's such an interesting way of bringing this kind of digital element of our private selves alive. Loved it.
I do have a proof, so I will get to it in the fullness of time, I hope.
I recommend.
Okay, so my next read is a book that I know you have read, and I cannot believe it took me this long because it is so good and so up my street. I'm a Fan by
Oh
Sheena
my God.
Patel.
I cannot believe you've only just read it.
I just feel like sometimes when a book is so like ubiquitous, I need a little cooling. I want to read it like in my own time and space, and that time and space happened to be right now. And
Cue.
yes, little quick cue.
Will you dive in? I just want to know which version you read.
I read an audio version.
Ah, okay, that's interesting. I've got no idea then if it's the rough trade or the
The
grantor.
Granta one, yeah. Do we know what the difference is?
All I know is that apparently it was originally published by Rough Trade,
Yes.
and then when grantor picked it up, there was some kind of editing process. I believe it was edited. So as far as I know, it's not quite the same book.
Fascinating. I would assume, based on what I know about audiobooks, I would assume that it was a Granta audiobook. I don't know what makes me say that, but I don't know.
Is there Spenny and Rough Trade is a title?
Exactly. Yeah,
Yeah.
exactly. That's what it is. I could be completely wrong. It was narrated by Sheena Patel herself,
Love.
which was great. So I feel like we've discussed this on the pod, but we've really discussed it 3 years ago, so we're allowed to give a little
Oh,
re-update.
I'm gonna be dipping into books we've discussed before. Let's just get that out the way right now.
So I'm a Fan is told from the point of view of an unnamed girlie who is have has a boyfriend, is having an illicit affair with another man who is also married but is a habitual cheater and has this other girlfriend with whom our narrator is obsessed, who is like a kind of aspirational lifestyle influencer girly. And so her life is very visible online and is very different to the life that is being lived by our narrator in many ways. Would you agree that's
Nailed it.
I've nailed it. I loved this because, as we know, I like books about girlies being mental about people they fancy. I like that as a book concept. Something I really, really liked about I'm a Fan is a book I really hated from the recent past that I just don't understand at all is Perfection by Vincenzo Lotronico. I hated Perfection. I felt that it was really like soulless. I felt that it was just trying to like observe without being part of the world. Whereas I feel like the observations that are being made in I'm a Fan, that they have a point of view. Like she is coming from like a racialized position, a class position. And I just felt like all of the observations about like status and taste and like what it, signifiers of like status and taste just felt so much more like significant to me. And like I don't know, I just felt so much more kind of like response to this book. It felt like it was really, it came from like a human position. That is my take.
Legit. I really enjoyed it, and I think I'm probably due at some point a little reread. But I only have the rough trade version. I bought the beautiful black sparkly hardcover because it was the Foyles Book of the Year. So maybe I will see if I can borrow the Granta. See if there's a
I would be
difference.
really like I'd love to know more about the editions being different. I did not know that.
It may well be. Maybe I've just completely made that up. So if I'm wrong, I'm sure one of our dear listeners will let me know. But I'm pretty sure it's not quite the same book, but
Intriguing. What was your next read, please?
so I'm just going to do you a quick fire now of the three books that I'd started last month, have not finished. They're not DNFs. I'm not a DNFer. However, they're just on pause. Once again, my friends, I have not managed to get through The Talented Mr. Ripley. I do not know why, that I just have some kind of mental block with this book.
Life is long.
I know, I think it's because I love the film so much. And this has never really happened to me before. I'm normally intrigued to see how the source material of a film I love or how a book I love has been adapted. I'm very open-minded. But I think because I'm so familiar with the movie that the book just isn't gripping me because I don't know.
Yeah, maybe Anthony Minghella slayed too hard with The Talented Mr. Ripley.
Honestly, you ruined it for me. And then also just a small update. I have not progressed with Girl on Girl by Sophie Gilbert. It's an essay collection. I'm still mooching my way through. This is about kind of how pop culture sets women against one another. But I was reading it for research for a book that I was working on, which I'm no longer working on. Same with You Had to Be There by Jodie Harsh, although I'm loving that and I will finish it this month. Yeah, I've had to put some research on pause because I'm changing directions.
Okay.
Little mysterious hint of what I've been up to. So yeah, I just wanted to, just for our friends at home, just wanted to be honest and keep everything
Above board.
above board and transparent.
On the record.
Yeah, so that's where we ended. That's where we are with last month's reading. The next one I talk about, I promise, will be something new. Over to you.
So my next read was a book I'd been like aware of. I think it maybe came out last year, which is Audition by Katie Kitamura. Have you read this?
I have not, but was that a women's prize?
It was longlisted for the Women's Prize and shortlisted for the Booker last year.
Hell yeah.
And I really enjoyed this. I think I'd read her another book by her called Intimacies a couple of years ago and hadn't enjoyed it as much. I've had a good run of fiction this month. So, Audition, here is the plot. It's a bit hard to nutshell, so I will just read you from the blurb. Two people meet for lunch in a Manhattan restaurant. She's an accomplished actress in rehearsals for an upcoming premiere. He's attractive, troubling young enough to be her son. Who is he to her, and who is she to him? In this compulsively readable, brilliantly constructed novel, two competing narratives unspool, rewriting our understanding of the roles we play every day: partner, parent, creator, muse, and the truths every performance masks, especially from those who think they know us most intimately. It is really good. It's semi-similar in a way to another book I will discuss later in terms of like, at first I was like not 100p vibing with it, but then by the end, as the sort of structure unfolds, I feel like it has done something really interesting. I would highly recommend. And again, not that long, only about 200 pages.
I'm
We love
intrigued.
it's good. It's sort of like clever and interesting. I really liked it.
Is there anything that you would compare it to?
Not off the top of my head. I mean, weirdly, it's a little. I went to see this play this week at the National Theatre called Electra Persona, and half, as you could guess, half of it is based on the Bergman film Persona, and it is a little bit like that in terms of like the blurring of the line, you know, when you are an actress and roles and human life. But in terms of books, I can't really think of anything. But yeah, I really liked it.
I'll give
What
it
is
a go.
your next read, my queen?
I'm bringing something new to the table now. You'll be pleased to know.
Some fresh meat.
I read an intriguing novel called Worry Doll by Laura McPhee Brown. Have you heard?
Okay. I have not.
So it's a novel in two halves, right? And I will be completely honest, the first half I was not connecting with it, but I did not feel it was the book's fault necessarily. I have been in I've been in a tough little spot for a while in terms of my brain, and concentration has not been like my vibe. So the first half of the novel is from the perspective of a woman called Heloise. She's a slightly older woman. Wait, let me rephrase that. The novel is about two women. She is the older of the two women. She lives with her boyfriend in Melbourne. And she has like a brief encounter with a woman called Lacey on a train. And the first half of the novel is about her essentially spiraling with this completely kind of obsession with Lacey. She's desperate to hear from her. She's checking her phone every 2 minutes. She's concocting these wild fantasies, and then she's kind of full of crippling doubt, which in theory is my exact kind of catnip in a novel, but I just was not really connecting with it. I don't know why. I just wasn't connecting with it. I'm so glad I pushed through. I did not realize that the second half of the book would be from Lacey's perspective, where you are kind of transported to a just a completely different life, where she is not thinking of Heloise at all.
Okay, this sounds good. How did you come, how
Yeah.
did you like come by it?
I think I saw, weirdly, I saw a different book on the internet, which has a very similar cover, which looked great. I've completely forgotten what the fuck that was. I was in a bookshop, saw Worry Doll, thought it was the book I'd seen recommended, picked it up without thinking too hard about it. Only realized when I saw the other book again that I had not picked up the same thing. As I said, man, I've not been thinking on all cylinders. You know, like
She's been going through
it's been a
it.
struggle. It's been a struggle. But anyway, so yeah, it was just one of those completely chance things where I picked up something, gave it a go. Also, as I've said before, I often pick up books and it takes me ages to get to them, but I read this immediately, like the week of buying. And yeah, ultimately, I mean, I always am going to love books about obsession and limerence and people going a little bit off the rails.
Same.
And this delivered that. Also, interestingly, I did go and have a little root around in the kind of reviews online. And it turns out, actually, I think a lot of people, a lot of readers experience the same thing, where the first half, although it's always fun to sit in these like really kind of intense headspaces, it's unclear where the book is going. And then when you lock in with Lacey, it's yeah, it all kind of comes together, and I found it really satisfying. So yeah, Worry Doll, Laura McPhee Brown, it is a good time.
Cool. I've never heard of it. So I, dear listeners, have got something out of this pod. So continuing my run of great fiction this month, I've just realized all seven books I read this month have been fiction. So that's cool that we're like back in business after a bit of a patchy year for me. The next book I read is a surprise hit for me. This has become one of my favorite books I've read this year. It has a very, to me, like an off-putting cover, and that is why I had not prioritized it. Sea Scraper by Benjamin Wood. Have you encountered this? It was longlisted for the Booker.
If it
It
was
won
listed
the
for the Booker, I would have.
Nero. Pardon?
Sorry, I didn't mean to speak over you then. If it was long listed for the Booker, I would have come across it,
Well, it
but I
won the
can't.
Nero Book Award last, like the Nero Fiction Award last year. So it, like, it's been around, but it's got this very kind of like muted grey cover with like a sort of bleak looking seaside scene, and for some reason it just spoke to me of like being melancholy and not really about anything. Like the cover, I judged a book by its cover. I thought it was going to be like low on plot, high on bleak vibes. I was wrong. It is so gorge, it is so great, it is so like lively. Here is the plot. Thomas lives a slow, deliberate life with his mother in Longferry, working his grandpa's trade as a shanker. He rises early to take his horse and cart to the grey, gloomy beach to scrape for shrimp. I mean, so far, so bleak and uninspiring. But spending the rest of the day selling his wares, trying to wash away the salt and scum, pining for Joan Wyeth down the street, and rehearsing songs on his guitar. At heart, he is a folk musician, but it remains a private dream. So far, I'm not vibing. Here is the real plot. When a striking visitor turns up, bringing the promise of Hollywood glamour, Thomas is shaken from the drudgery of his days and begins to see a different future. But how much of what the American claims is true, and how far can his inspiration carry Thomas? Basically, it's about this dude who like goes poking around in the sea for like the worst little creatures. And then this like American film director comes to his town and wants to film something in the town and gets Thomas to like show him around. And yeah, I feel the plot does not necessarily like do the book justice because it is just so gorge. I did it on audiobook, weirdly also read by the author, and there is an element of it that I think means if you listen to it on audio, you get so much more out of it. And I have like not returned it to the library yet because I want to like listen to this stuff again. The audiobook is so good, and you literally could not get it from reading the book with your eyeballs. I loved this book. I loved it so much. I only downloaded it because I discovered that actually I'm a member of the Barbican Library, and they have like loads of good newish, like last couple of years, literary fictiony audiobooks. And that's how I got like the Katie Kitamura. That's how I got I'm a Fan. That's how I got this. So I was just on this like little tear of downloading these books, and this one was such a rogue choice for me, and I absolutely loved it. That is my rec, my rogue rec to the listeners this month.
Can I just say, I don't know why shrimp caught so many strays there in your conversation about this book. You were like the worst creatures
Well, they're delicious,
imaginable.
but he's not like a fisherman. He's like scrungling around for like the
Yeah, he's
bottom
not.
feeders.
Yeah, it's not like lobster.
No.
It's not exciting. It's not glamorous. It's, you know. I also enjoyed when you said scraping for shrimp, something that our listeners would not have the benefit of. Is you leant towards the camera and you gave me quite almost like a kind of conspiring look, as though that's something I personally would know all
Oh,
about.
yeah, you, the shrimp scraper. The shrimp scraper of Woodford.
Great title, Spencer Litvick.
So, listeners, please, if you have not encountered Sea Scraper, especially if you have the opportunity to listen to it as an audiobook, do not miss it. What was your next book, my queen?
My next book, if we're going to go chronological, was actually a little listen. And I realized you've mentioned two books so far you listened to via audio, read by the narrator.
True.
All three of my re-listens this month were also read by the authors, which I think is fun. Did I just say
Agree.
read by the narrator?
I know what you mean.
Whatever. She's not smart, okay? I never promised smart. Anyway, I re-listened to my all-time favorite audiobook, The Secret History by Donna Tartt. We've discussed it so many times, I don't need to go into it, but I cannot stress enough, if you are the kind of person who enjoys an audiobook and you have already read The Secret History with your eyeballs, please just treat yourself and listen to Donna reading it herself, because it is absolutely phenomenal. For me, this is just it's like sinking into It's like sinking into a place of true comfort while also being quite horrendous. Like, The Secret History is full of horrible people doing awful things, which is my absolute catnip. And Donna's voice, her mad little bunny voice, I'm just obsessed with it.
I'm due a reread, and I might as well do it on audio, mightn't I?
You honestly must. I almost feel like every so often, I've probably read The Secret History, God, 10 times. But only maybe three times on with via the physical copy, the fizzy cop, as we like to
Busy
say.
pop.
And yeah, I kind of actively now, even when I'm reading the novel, I'm reading it in Donna's voice. That is just how powerful her reading is. So cannot recommend it enough. Treat yourself.
Okay, I'm sold. Yeah, I haven't revisited, obviously it's a book I'm extremely fond of, but I haven't reread it for a long time. So I love an audio book, as we know. So my next read was a book I read with my eyeballs. I did not read it with my ear holes. Once
Unusual.
again, I know. Once again, my book dealer, my friend John, friend of the pod, gave me a book he had read and finished. And I thought, oh, delicious. I've been wanting to read this book. I've seen it everywhere. It is Transcription by Ben Lerner. So I was kind of curious. And it turns out I loved it. So this is the one that I would have said. Vibes-wise, was the most similar to when I was describing the experience that I had with Audition by Katie Kitamura, where it has like a sort of, it's in parts, and the parts sort of, yeah, the structure of the book really enhances as it goes along. At first, I was not vibing. So here is what Transcription is about. The narrator, again, we have an unnamed narrator, I think. The narrator of Ben Lerner's new novel has travelled to Providence, where he is to conduct what will be the final published interview with Thomas, his 90-year-old mentor and the father of his college friend Max. But after the narrator drops his smartphone in the hotel sink, he arrives at Thomas's house with no recording device, a fact that he is mysteriously unable to confess. What unfolds from this dreamlike circumstance is both the unforgettable story of the triangle formed by Thomas, Max, and the narrator, and a brilliant meditation on those technologies, blah, 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 blah. Make you think about phones. But yeah, basically, that is the plot. Dude goes to interview this very significant, like, academic and cultural figure from the world, but also from his own life, drops his phone in the sink. Cannot record the interview, cannot admit that he cannot record the interview. So yeah. The beginning third, where it is the two guys like talking, I found a little bit, I don't personally enjoy like philosophy as a concept. Like that's not like a discipline that speaks to me. We know I'm like an art history guy. Like there are things that I am interested in, but philosophy is actually not one of them. So if there's, yeah, bits where people are talking about like theory and philosophy, I tend to not bond with those. But actually, as the book goes along, and the more it's about like the sort of fact of, I don't know, like the real like tangible facts of the story, and the implications for the people involved, I thought it was so great. I enjoyed it so much, and I was expecting to. And actually, I'm kind of curious to read it again. I might actually reread it in the not too distant future because, again, it's not that long. It's like 150 pages. And I feel like I would be interested to reread it from the perspective of having enjoyed it by the end. Obviously, everyone's reading it. It's very popular at the moment. People do not need me to endorse it, but I will indeed endorse it.
People do need you to endorse it. We're nosy and we like to know what you're reading.
True.
Also, the idea of coming up to an interview, having dropped my phone into a hotel room sink with therefore no ability to record, sounds like an anxiety dream that I would have.
Yep. It is not out of the
Dreadful.
question.
As you were describing that, I was getting really concerned, and then I was like, I literally don't have to do that. This isn't my job. I don't ever have to worry about I'd have to worry about having a recording device. I just don't need to record the things I'm saying, apart from right
Right now.
now via Zoom, and that's your job, not mine.
What was your next read?
So next was another reread from me. I hope this isn't too boring for everyone, but I read Boy Parts by Eliza Clarke, also via my ears, also read by the author.
Indeed.
Also another example of an audiobook where I just cannot believe the author herself was able to create such vivid voices with her own mouth. Oh God, that was just the most inarticulate way of saying what I'm trying to say. But
I know what you mean.
she brings her characters to life so effectively. And I really admire it because I just know that I could not do my own audiobook. I know
Well,
that's not a skill that I
exactly. No, but that's not our job. Like, it's not like you should be expected to be good at reading aloud and creating, basically acting. Like, authors are not expected to be
Hell yeah.
actors. So when you can be an author who can read your own audiobook and do such a good job that people comment on how good a job you did, like that's actually really fucking cool.
Yeah, it's really fucking rock and roll, man. But Boy Parts, I mean, Boy Parts isn't 6 years old now, I guess. And I thought, I know that we've discussed it on the pod before. I don't think, have you read it? You haven't read it, have
I
you?
have not. I've read
It's
other
very,
books by
very.
Herbert, but not Boy Parts.
You've read Penance, haven't you?
I've read Penance and I loved Penance.
Have you read She's Always Hungry, the short story
I
collection?
don't think so.
It's so good.
Well, life is long. I need to leave myself things that I know I'll enjoy.
Exactly. But yeah, Boy Parts, it's become such a phenomenon on the internet. I think you can't really swipe on any kind of Bookstagram or BookTok space without coming across a Boy Parts recommendation. And I'm pleased to report, having reread it, I still love it. It's very much, I think I described it in my very first review, when I used to bother writing things on Goodreads. I described the main character as Patrick Bateman in an E cup, and I stand by it. It's very American Psycho-esque, but it's also about the kind of ways in which gender plays a role in I can't even think how I want to articulate it. I can't be bothered. I'm tired. We all know what boy parts. We all know boy parts. I'm sorry, I'm doing a dreadful job today.
I hear you, Queen. We know boy parts. You got it.
Thank you, everyone, for supporting me in my hour of need. I promise, I will be more articulate with the next book I talk about. Moving on.
So the next book I read was the only one this month where I was a bit like lukewarm on it. I liked it. It was, whatever. It's the next book in a series by Val McDermid about a journalist, like a sort of investigative journalist. I read the first one back in like January, February, called 1979. This one is called 1989. And it was good, but it just wasn't particularly thrilling. I think the first book was much more thrillery, whereas I got a lot out of reading 1989. It was really interesting to think about, the fall of the Berlin Wall, the sort of early-ish days of like the AIDS epidemic. It was, there were very good and interesting elements to it. It just wasn't quite as like exciting and thrilling as I would like it to have been. She's a great writer. She is an icon. She is a queen. I stan Val McDermid. I think she's like a great person in the crime ecosystem. This just wasn't like my fave of hers, and that's okay.
I've never read a Val McDermid book. I probably should, shouldn't I? I feel like it's a
I
real
yes,
gap, right?
I well, I have not read a lot of Val McDermid, but and I'm sure I have said this before on the pod. I'm sure I've said this to you in convo, but it was a book by Val McDermid that made me want to read more thrillers. That was the first thriller I read, and it was called A Place of Execution. And I have no idea whether that is like considered some of her best work. I don't know whether that's just like a minor work that I happen to read. But I love that book, and I think it's like, a proper all-timer for me. So I would at least recommend that. What was your next read?
My next read was Milk, Bread, Teeth by Amy Twigg. I read this as a proof. Amy Twigg wrote a book called Sport Creatures. Have you read that?
I have not.
I absolutely love Sport Creatures. I'm a Amy Twigg fan. I think she's great. This one, Milk, Bread, Teeth, is about a young woman who becomes completely preoccupied by her appetite. So she has this completely insatiable hunger that just cannot be sated, regardless of what she eats. And as the book progresses, what she's eating gets fucking weirder and weirder until it gets really gross. It gets so fucking gross. Amy Twigg, you are so gross. So for anyone who loves that kind of weird girl lit, kind of body horror-esque, literature, which is kind of written to be ugh, like written to make you feel like you need
Bad.
power, yeah, then Milk, Bread, Teeth is the one for you.
Well, I'm meeting up with her to knit soon, so I hope IRL she is someone that does not make me feel like I need a shower and indeed makes me feel like I love to yap and knit.
Can I just say, Amy Twigg is absolutely the kind of person I could imagine being a little cutie pie, knitting like a pair of socks while thinking her hideous thoughts that she's going to put into her literature.
The best combination. So are those all of your books?
I actually have one more that I've another reread, which again, I don't really have much to say about because we've discussed it before, but have you
Shall
got any more?
we? Why don't we? Because my I we're going to end on a high with mine. So shall we? If you don't have much to say, shall we do yours and then do mine?
Perf. I'll just knock it out. I also re-listened to, and I will say one of the reasons why I've been re-listening a lot, A, very famously, I do not vibe with fiction via audio if I haven't read it before. My brain just doesn't work that way. I cannot concentrate on it. I cannot sit in the world of the book in the way in which I want to. But also I can't join, I've cancelled my Audible subscription and I cannot get hold of Libby because I have a library fine I need to pay. And
Oops.
I've owed this money for about 10 years. I just need to physically go to my library and pay it. But I'm a busy gal and I never think to do it. So I've just been re-listening to things in my Audible library. And that's how I ended up re-listening to my friend Anna. Can't even remember the author's name. What's her name?
I don't know.
You've read it though, haven't you?
I don't think so. I'm not an Anna Delvey guy. You're an Anna Delvey guy.
Well, you know what? I feel like Anna Delvey. I don't know, man. I love a scammer, which is why The Talented Mr. Ripley should
Speaks.
be. It should be my vibe. And as I just realized as I said all that, it's because I figured, because I know the plot, I'd rub along well with the audio, but clearly that's what the issue is. I need to just read the physical fucking book. But yeah, I love narratives about scammers. My friend Anna is, of course, about Anna Delvey, the fake German heiress, which took the internet by storm. Again, I guess probably 5 or 6 years ago.
It was kind of lockdowny, like pre-lockdown.
Yeah. No,
Yeah.
it was pre-lockdown, because I think I listened to it on a flight to Japan, which would have been 2019.
It would.
And yet, for me, you know, it's not necessarily the most groundbreaking example of memoir. It's from the perspective of a friend of Anna's who famously paid for, against her will, she ended up paying for like a $30,000 hotel in Marrakesh, expecting to be reimbursed by her incredibly rich friend. And the friend was not, in fact, incredibly rich. She was a
Gamma.
fraudster and she could not get the cash to pay her friend back. So the whole book is about kind of unpicking this web of lies to find out why her rich friend suddenly cannot afford to pay back this money, which is essentially ruining her life. It's just, I just enjoy it. I think I specifically really enjoy, in my friend Anna, the kind of the New York socialite side of things. That's what I really
Yes.
enjoy. Like, because the lifestyle is just fucking nuts. Like, they're going to infrared saunas. They're going to like insane hotel nightclubs. Like, it's just so different from anything that I would ever experience. I think I quite enjoy sitting in that.
I hear you.
But yeah, I was like, oh, I don't have much to say. And then I just fucking spaffed loads of shit. But whatever, it be what it be.
It do. So I finished the month on a high. As we know, because I think I have talked about it on the pod, my true love, I enjoy nothing more than the series of books by the wonderful Kate Atkinson about Jackson Brodie, her private detective. And I, as I said earlier in the pod, I like leaving things to look forward to. I need there to be things in my future. So I have been trying to leave some Jackson Brodies for myself to read. I decided now was the time for me to read. There's now one that I haven't read. So there were, until this month, there were two that I'd left unread. Now there is but one. This one is called Big Sky, and it is it's just the same as her other Jackson Brodie books in that they are just better than what everyone else is doing. She is just better. Like there are, I just love her. I love her writing. I love this series in particular. She just has this like unbelievable way of like weaving plots and weaving like time and place. And obviously she wrote the very, very successful and well-liked Life After Life, which is a sort of time loop book set around the Second World War. She has this incredible book called Behind the Scenes of the Museum that is also kind of about time, like, and this is not in any way like a sort of time travel-y book or like about time in that like way, but there's just something about like the past and the present, people moving around each other, coincidences. And yeah, every single one of these books is just better than what anyone else could do with the same material. That this is, I think, maybe also because they're not necessarily marketed as like straightforwardly crime books, the covers, you might not really get that that's what they are, but like this one in particular is so dark. Like this was, I don't know exactly when this came out, but it's clearly from a like post Jimmy Savile world where like we are aware of these kinds of like, you know, networks of people in positions in like council and, you know, local business and government that were like propping up like bad people. So that's the kind of world in which Big Sky is set. It's all set around kind of like the North Yorkshire coast, around like Whitby. One of the characters works at Transylvania World, a theme, a little amusement place in Whitby.
Oh, I know her.
You know Transylvania World.
Is it real? I can't remember if that's actually real. There is like a Dracula experience, which
Well,
has
it's probably based on the Dracula experience, but that's the world we're in, and it is just so good. Like, I just love her. I'm as effusive about the Kate Atkinson, Jackson Brodie books as I was like muted about the Val McDermid, Ali Burton series. I love Kate Atkinson. I love everything she does, but I especially love these books, and I'm sad that I only have one in the bank for me to withdraw at the right moment.
See, this is where I think our personalities really are very different, because I would just smash through them all until I felt sick on them. No part of me is like, oh, I'll save that for later. I'm smashing through it.
That is a very key element of my personality, is like needing to enjoy. Like, I'm obsessed with enjoying things. Like, I'm to a fault. Like, I need to enjoy things to the maximum. So I'm like, when will I enjoy this book the most? I will save it for when I really want to like have a good time.
It makes me think though, man, you would pass the marshmallow test, no problem.
Yes.
No
Yeah,
problem.
I'm very delayed gratification. I'm also obviously we do not like the man, but in I think it's Annie Hall where they turn up like 1 minute late to a film and he's like, well, we got to go home. Like it's over. Like that is also me. Like if I cannot fully enjoy something, I do not want to experience it. Like I'd rather not eat a meal if I do not have enough time to enjoy the meal. I want everything. If it's to be enjoyed, I wish to enjoy it. So that is my philosophy.
It
That is my
makes
philosophy of Kate Atkinson.
me think of a friend who will remain unnamed, but she knows who she is, who watched the entirety of June on her phone at 3 a.m.
She did do that. That is, yeah, that could literally never be me. So yes. That is my recommendation of all recommendations. If you have not read any Kate Atkinson, but even if you have read other Kate Atkinson but have not read the Jackson Brodie books, Case Histories, I think, is one of the best books I've ever read in my life. It is the beginning of an incredible series. I love every installment, and I will be sad when I have finally caught up with it. So, those are all of our books. We have like two any other businesses.
We do, which
So,
we don't always
first,
have.
yeah, we don't normally, but first, any other business is the shards on the TV. Because, as you know, if you listen to this pod, we both loved the book, The Shards by Bret Easton Ellis. Are you watching?
I am not yet watching because I think I'm going to have to pay my physical money, to access it via Disney.
I do already, unfortunately, pay Disney money so that I can watch The Shards. And I gotta say, Queen, I'm loving it. I've only watched three episodes. I think there are nine in total. I don't know how many have already been aired. I've seen three. And the first two episodes, I think the first episode is like immaculate. I think it is such a good adaptation of the book. I think it is so interesting. I think Ryan Murphy has really gone off the boil, but I think this prod is like the perfect material for him. I think him and Bret Easton Ellis are like a weirdly great little duo. I think it's so well cast with like one or two exceptions. But the third episode is the first time that they have like deviated from the book. They've like added in storylines, characters that are not in the book. And I'm really interested to see like what and how they do with that. I think you'll have a great time.
I'm just so intrigued by the fact that they've added rather than removed, because it's a chunky fucking book.
So you have a great memory.
I do.
So famously.
I'm laughing because of me trying to describe Boy Parts, a book I've read like four times and completely zoned out on it. Anyway,
So
continue.
in episode three, one of the trawler's victims is A girl played by Ivy Walk. Do you know this girly? Okay, well, she's from English Teacher. She's like a, I think she's like on TikTok or something. I don't know. Anyway, she's like a classmate of the kids in the story who has like Tourette's and loves roller skating. Do either of the, no, she's not in the book. That's what I thought. I was like, sometimes I zone out, but in general, I pay attention and I don't remember any of that. So yes, confirm that they have changed, added, maybe they just really wanted Ivy Walk to be in it and she loves to roller skate. So they had to create a roller skating character for her.
I'll be totally honest, the roller skating element, because it's set in the 1980s, characters could be skating all over the place. I don't know. That's not necessarily something that would like stick in my head. It's the Tourette's element where I feel pretty confident. I don't recall reading that.
I just don't remember any of like that. This
Okay.
character to me is not in the book. So that's interesting because, as you say, it's a long book. And the first two episodes, I think, are like incredibly faithful to the book. So it's interesting that they're now like going off on a little tangent. But yeah, I think, pardon?
Do I recall that Bret Easton Ellis parted ways with the production? I think at the third episode.
Interesting. Okay. Well, maybe I will be retracting my effusive praise by the end of the series, but I thought the first two episodes specifically were so great.
That's why I might hold out. If you are still loving it when you're like halfway through, maybe I will drop some dollar and watch it. I
I'll
do need
check back
to
in.
watch it myself though, but you know, we'll see.
We'll see. So our final any other business is a nice one. So I live in the beautiful borough of Lewisham. And I was contacted by somebody who works for the library ecosystem in Lewisham because they are, a listener of the pod. So hello. And there is an event happening on Sunday, the 13th of September at Manor House Library in Lee, in the beautiful borough of Lewisham, which is the Indie Press Fair. And there are like four talks, there are panels, but there's also just like stalls. So there are like really interesting sounding events, panels, from everything to do with like literally small press publishing to talks with authors who have been published by small presses. Like Nell Osborne, who wrote Ghost Driver, which is a book that I've like seen around. So like they're in conversation, there's like an event for that. Entry is £8, which covers browsing the stalls. You get a drink, and you can go to like whatever talks and panels that you want. But you have to like book those. The tickets are through Ticket Tailor. You'll be able to find it at Indie Press Fair, but you can Google. But we can also give away some tickets. So why don't, when we've put the post up about this episode, why don't you just drop us a little emoji of a stack of books below if you want to potentially win the tickets to the Indie Press Fair at Manor House Library in Lee on Sunday, the 13th of September. Does that sound nice?
That sounds so nice.
What a nice thing. And thank you to Charlotte for offering that to us. What a blessing.
Thank you, Charlotte.
Well, we are going to meet up and mince and mooch around.
Yeah, it's a day of rascality for you lads.
And I hope you enjoyed this episode, and we will see you on the flip side.
Bye.
Bye.